episode 77. I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon.
I'm Karen.
Whoops. Intern. And changed.
And dead.
Back, what does changed mean?
Well, I used to be known as Bob the Intern, if you'll remember, and you have a listener that says, I'd rather have me known as Intern.
So you want to be called Intern?
Well, you always refer to me as Intern anyway, so.
Are you going
to
pull a Walt, like, any minute now?
A what?
A Walt.
What's a Walt?
You don't watch Breaking Bad, so you probably have no idea what I'm talking about.
No.
So you're going to become a meth cook?
Yeah, I think Bob would be a good meth cook, actually.
Was it sort of like Cher? We're going to call you Intern?
Intern, like Cher, like,
Madonna.
See, I don't think it was sort of like Bob the Builder. Bob
so not. That's what I always took it as. Yeah.
Okay.
Can he review? Yes, he can.
slam, early.
That's why he's an intern.
That's good for three. That's a swoosh, Kevin.
It's a hat trick for Deb.
That was a basketball team.
So I quite like the new intro. Yeah, we listened to it just before recording here.
I'm glad you finally got to it.
For the first time. So, yeah, I still didn't quite understand what you said at the beginning. Something about, like, at the dawn of time, there was a machine, and I put the DVD in the machine, and then Extra Features podcast was born. But then the rock and music comes in.
Well, you're not supposed to listen to me anyway. So.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, well, so usually.
That's exactly.
I try not to.
I do have a quick question. I was quite shocked by this, but I'm kind of excited. Eddie Murphy hosting the Oscars. I just want a quick spiel. Anybody?
You're excited by that?
I love Eddie Murphy. Not lately, but if he's back to old Eddie Murphy, I'll be happy.
Eddie Murphy stand-up is genius.
So Eddie Murphy hosting Oscars excites you?
Yes or no? Why? You interrupt. Yes.
In.
I'm in as long as he does not bring back the red leather suit.
Oh, he has to.
No.
Like Delirious?
No. Hey, Norton! No. No red suit from Delirious.
Ice cream!
Are you in or out?
Oh, for sure I'm in. Anything that could make the Oscar telecast less boring, I'm in.
Come on, boogie in your butt, boogie. Everyone boogies in the butt. That's nasty, man. What about me? In your butt.
Sorry, I'm a...
Really?
Eddie Murphy's best days are long.
Well, that's what I'm hoping isn't. I'm hoping this isn't.
This is the man that made Dave.
Well, I think he made some bad choices.
Was that a bad
one? That's the one where he's a little him rides around in a big robot version of him.
We reviewed it.
Yeah, I know. It was awful. If you'll remember, you two hated it. I liked it.
Yeah. What a shock!
Wow.
No wonder you're in for this.
And I heard they might make a Pretty Vengeance, too.
I saw that for
I saw the casting call sign in the forest. Yes, I did.
I saw Baloo the Bear walking, but he had a blue shirt on, so I was a little confused.
It's bear necessities.
And I had, I can't remember. I wrote down something else and I've forgotten. Oh, well.
Okay, so, and I hear that you've been distributing copies.
I have been.
Podcast to people.
I told you it was coming. Nobody listens to me. I told you it was coming. It's coming slowly.
He had a little stall at the corner of Young and Dundas there during the film festival.
Although, actually, that was the intern stall. I just dropped things off.
That was where you're selling lemonade, right?
What? Yeah, I sell lemonade.
Podcast, $1?
Meth and lemonade.
Well, you know, we need to pay for our street meat during the film festival.
Hey, hot dogs went up to $2.75. What's up with that guy?
Now, when did that happen?
They're gouging.
I didn't pay it.
Try going to Rogers Center. They're $4.
Well, that means I would actually have to see a crappy baseball team on a crappy field.
Outside the Rogers Center.
Oh.
Inside, it's $5.25.
Still too much money. Okay, will anybody watch the movies on this crazy show?
Movies?
What?
Are you saying this show's about movies?
I thought I was here for karaoke. That's why I have a mic.
Yeah, I thought this was about, we were going to talk about the film festival a little bit.
I wish I ate for the food.
Film festival, what's that?
I don't know.
I've never been to one of those.
Well, we had a mini film festival.
Woo-hoo. Did you?
We watched a number of movies.
Oh, we did?
We're going to review tonight.
Oh, great.
And the first movie on our list is something called Super, directed by James Gunn, starring Rainn Wilson, Ellen Page, Liv Tyler, Kevin Bacon, Linda Cardellini, Michael Rooker, and in a role of awesome, Nathan Fillion. So who saw Super? 3 out of 5. All right, Simon, start us off.
You know what I like? We discussed this casually, me and Deb, the other week.
I don't know that.
You didn't know that?
I'm not privy to the casual conversations you have with Dev.
Oh, I just thought it was okay. But I hate Rainn Wilson. That's my biggest problem. I just want to punch him in the face whenever I have to look at him.
You really want to kill him with fire?
Yes.
Okay, then. I had a really weird reaction to this movie. Part of me loved it, and part of me was really disturbed. But at the total same time.
Yeah, no, I can see where you're coming from. I like the film overall, but there are some weird sequences in this, and he uses a, like, all right, so Rainn Wilson, his wife leaves him to go with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, and because she's giving him drugs.
Yes.
That's what he claims.
He's giving her drugs.
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
So, Rain decides to become, because he's told this through visions from God.
God's always around.
That he should become a superhero. And what was his suit? It was the Red Mist? No.
No, the Red Mist.
Red something.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen this.
And he has...
The Crimson Bolt.
That's it! Thank you, Deb.
Yes. So he goes and he does some research on superheroes, makes a costume, goes out, and...
No, he had to go to the store and meet up on Page first to get the comics. Remember,
right,
comics.
Ellen Page works at the local comic store, and she's a little enthusiastic and is eager to help him out. So he becomes a superhero, makes the papers from violently beating up some people. And she comes to him and she wants to be his sidekick. So she makes a costume, Bolty, and they go out and mistakenly beat up some people. Anyway, it's just kind of silly.
I still think the silliest scene, was it the movie theater when he beats up some guy in the theater that hops in his car?
Yeah, for running in the line.
Yeah, he bunches in the line and gets all pissed off.
Yeah, and it's what I thought was kind of weird and interesting was the fact that he tells crime to shut up. That's his thing. But all crime seems to exist on kind of the same level. Like, he does exactly the same thing to a child molester that he does to the guy who butts in line in the movie theater. Namely, wail the hell out of him with a lug wrench.
Right. That's his weapon.
Yeah.
Come on, nothing wrong with good lug wrench to the head.
Oh, no, but it's just that is his standard response to all evil.
Well, he's obviously confused and disturbed greatly.
That's why we have rules. You don't mess with them. So,
That's what you were saying, Kevin?
Sorry. What's this photo you just showed me?
I wanted to show you that Super 8. Super. That's a real Super.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Okay. So, here, take it.
Could you go on?
What?
Continue.
All right, I'm not distracted by this photo. It's a photo of a guy getting into a car. He's got a giant purple suit out of his back truck. Anyway.
Oh, is that the pink gorilla?
That's the pink gorilla.
Oh, look at that here.
Those cargo shorts are a little low riding.
Did you check out the not wearing any shoes?
I was just saying, we're talking about a superhero. Is that a real life super?
Is that a real life superhero?
Yeah.
No, that's a disturbed mascot who needs a bath.
Well, you know, one could argue that he was rescuing the pink gorilla.
Well, that's my argument. The pink gorilla was in need.
From his trunk.
Yes.
Anyway.
No, he picked it up on the side of the road.
Back to the movie.
Oh, we're back, sorry.
Okay. So, Bolty seems to be quite enamored of her time with the Crimson Bolt. And during a time when he's recovering, she basically rapes him.
Yeah, that was bizarre, that scene.
Sequence.
Yeah, that was the one scene that I almost got up and left, because I was just like, oh, man, that's really over the top. And it makes you ask yourself, is she altogether sane?
No, definitely not. She's totally insane.
Yeah, so then he goes into the bathroom and throws up. And his puke makes a face in the toilet and tells him that he has to go and rescue his wife.
Yes.
So,
The movie's full of those moments.
And then
I don't think I missed anything, really.
At the end of the movie, when he talks about his wife leaving him, and now he has two kids and his uncle.
Well, and Alan Page's death is a little bit unexpected.
Yes.
But I still kind of like the movie. It was a little brutal.
Yeah, like, I'll stick to my original statement. Like, it's fun, but it's nuts. And Nathan Fillion is awesome as...
Oh, yeah.
He only appears in character as a Christian superhero.
He's like, Jesus is the superhero. I don't know if I'd really recommend the film. I mean, if you like superhero movies, you like odd indie comedies, and, you know, you're an adult. I don't recommend it.
I don't have to be an adult for this one.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon was awesome in it.
Kevin Bacon's really good in everything, though.
Yeah. So overall, I'd say what? Thumbs down?
I give it a thumbs down.
I'm going to give it a marginal thumb.
Marginal in the middle?
Yeah, I kind of go the same way with that.
Fair enough.
All right.
Bob, do you have Fear of the Unknown?
In this case, no.
No?
Do you know what we're talking about?
Yes, I do. I believe it's the next movie.
Who's charging it, Bob?
That would be Liam Neeson, Diane Kruger, January Jones, Frank Langella, Aidan Quinn, and Bruno Kahns.
So who saw this one?
I did.
Everybody said Deb?
That's right.
Deb was busy. She had to talk to some friends on Facebook.
I guess so.
No, I just didn't see it.
Yeah. So it's unknown to you.
Oh, sweetie, did you stay up all night thinking of that one?
Oh. I did stay up all night, but I'm not thinking about that. So, Gary, you want to start us off with a review of Unknown?
All right, so Liam Neeson is he a professor, a doctor, something?
Professor.
Is he a professor?
Yeah.
He's going to Berlin for a conference. Where he is to be a speaker, like a guest speaker. He is married to January Jones in the film, and she is accompanying him on the trip. He is ready to check into his hotel, and that sets up the, sequence of events where he left something in the cab, which was his laptop. So he's on the way to get the cab. Oh, gee, cab leaves. It's driving away. So he hops into another cab to chase it, to retrieve his laptop, and he is in a car accident, rendering him with amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, got it so far. I saw it a really long time ago.
He didn't have amnesia.
They said he had
amnesia. He was told he had amnesia because nothing was connecting the dots for him.
Right.
Well, his cab fell in the water. The cab driver saved him.
Yes.
And this all happened in the hospital, and he has no clue what's going on, because he has unknown. Like they say he has, but he remembers things.
He knows things, but what he's telling people, they're telling him is not the case.
Well, yeah, because he goes back to the hotel.
And someone else is him.
His room with his wife.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like he's been replaced. And he, you know, is this really his life? Is this really him? Like, this is he doesn't know. It's unknown to him. So, go ahead. Sorry.
I saw it a really long time ago. So the story progresses as he tries to figure out what his story really is and why other people are claiming to be him. And why other people are basically discrediting him as who he thinks he is.
Yeah, like Aidan Quinn has replaced him. And everyone believes him. Because he's there with the right paperwork, with the right information.
With the right wife. With
wife,
everything.
Yeah. And there's some funny business about an assassination attempt on an Arab prince who's doing some work with the researcher. So there's some suspicion that maybe this is part of a lot. He believes it may be part of a larger plot to assassinate this guy. So he wants to try to... there's urgency because he thinks he is this guy and someone's replaced him for a terrorist plot, basically, right?
Yeah, I just want to say I was fine for the first about 45, 50 minutes of this movie. I was totally on board. And then when they started getting more into the assassination attempt, and we find that, I guess, Liam Neeson's story starts making sense in different places, and things start coming back to him, and people are trying to stop him, and that's when this whole movie fell apart to me. It sounds like almost two different, they were going one way with it,
mm-hmm.
and then decided, stop, oh, we got to wrap this up, we're going to go 40 minutes the other way.
Right.
And that really upset me, because I was really getting into the thing, and then it just seemed to fall on a cliche. Did you find that for the last 40 minutes? And we find that, do you want me to ruin this? Should I go for it?
All right.
He was an assassin. He really was supposed to get the Arab prince. But then in the end, it becomes good.
The reality is that the person that he was doesn't exist. It's a cover.
Right.
And when he goes off the grid,
they put somebody else.
They put a replacement in with the same memory.
But he doesn't realize that, though.
So he is amnesiac, but he remembers the false life.
Yeah, not his real life.
And January Jones, who worked with him on many occasions, sort of, there's a connection there, but...
It never explained.
But she's about as wooden here as she was in First Class. And
then on Mad Men. She's pretty wooden on Mad Men.
But the film itself was okay, and then Danny Cox, is that his name, the guy who was Stryker in X-Men 1 and 2?
Brian Cox.
He shows up, and he reveals that he's a sleeper agent, and is Aiden.
Well, that's the end. They're like, okay.
And then, for some reason, Liam still, now that he knows that he was supposed to be assassinating the guy, still doesn't want to have the guy assassinate
him. Yeah, I know. It was kind of bizarre.
It was sort of like, he realized what his purpose was, but then all of a sudden he doesn't want to follow through on the purpose.
Right.
And that, I thought, reading, you know, the back of the movie or reviews, it had promise. I thought, but that's where just at that last little bit, it didn't work for me.
So you had problems in the last 20 minutes? I had problems
maybe
the last
20 minutes, yeah.
As soon as he started figuring things out and tried to stop them, I'm like, why are you stopping them? Because that was your job.
This sounds awfully convoluted.
Oh, the first 40 minutes make perfect sense. You're right into it. Like, I was into the first four, maybe even the first hour, I can't remember, but then it just falls apart for me.
Which is a shame, because it's like, it sounds like they made half a really great movie.
You know, I agree, it falls apart more towards the latter half of the film. The first hour or so is quite good, because we don't know what happened to him. What's happened, why is there a replacement? You know, is this a plot, or... You know,
it's never explained, and you live in the unknown. As a viewer, you're living through Liam Neeson, which I liked.
Mm-hmm.
But when they started explaining it, you're like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would they do that? Why is he doing that?
Yeah,
Okay, so you're saying they lost you?
They lost you in the last part.
They lost you in the last 20 minutes.
I'm about the last 20 minutes.
I'm going to have to disagree with you. I was watching the whole thing, and I know the point where you got lost is where, like, they started explaining it.
Yes, and I didn't like it. I didn't grasp.
I just kept focusing on what was going around, and I just let go, and I didn't have a problem. But I just enjoyed the whole thing.
Oh, good.
As a movie itself, like, it just, like, it, for some reason, I don't know why, but it flowed, and it sort of made sense that he was a sleeper agent, and it sort of, the life clicked in after that, for some reason, I don't know.
I'm glad it worked for you. I want somebody to work for you. I want another opinion, but I gave you the thumbs in the middle, and I'll stick with that.
I'm in the middle of the fence. It's like kind of a la Bourne Identity, kind of ish.
But it never gets better. That was my issue. The first hour, I was into, I'm good, I love it, and then dropped.
Yeah.
It was rocking a definite, maybe a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Getting up there, and then went right down.
You know,
yeah.
I don't think lost is the right word. Because I never felt like I was out of my element or I didn't understand what was going on with this movie.
I just
lost interest.
That's it. I lost total interest in it.
Right?
I didn't like their explanation of...
Yeah.
Of why he was doing what he was doing. Like, I just thought that was very weak. It was just an easy out.
It was an interesting twist that he was actually a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
Brainwashed to... But it just, not as good as it could have been.
So, terrorist. So, Liam Neeson is, in movie terms, a bad guy who's supposed to assassinate this prince.
So, no, hold on. The prince assassination is a cover story. They really want to kill the scientist who's got a breakthrough in something. I can't remember what the something was. Plastics or something?
No, plants.
Right. And he was creating something that a type of plant life that you could grow and would help with crops.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Yes, you're 100%.
It was
solve the world.
Yeah, solve
the world food problem.
Yeah,
food problem.
And the whatever government was hiring these people didn't want that problem solved.
Yeah, that was it. You're right. You remember it.
Or they wanted the secret so they could control it on their own.
I watched this when it came out, like day two.
Yeah, so I'd give it a marginal thumbs up, but it's not a great movie by any stretch.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Dev, did you see the next one?
Next movie on our list is Unstoppable, directed by Tony Scott, starring Captain Kirk, Denzel Washington, Chris Pine, Denzel Washington, Rosario Dawson, Kevin Dunn, T.J. Miller, Kevin Corrigan, Jesse Schramm, and Ethan Suplee. And who saw this one? All right, The Three Musketeers.
The original.
The founding fathers.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Bob.
All right.
Okay. I guess... okay, Chris Pine plays the new guy on the train lots, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Got it. Mm-hmm.
And Denzel Washington he's almost set to retire. He plays he's doing the old guard engineer, and he looks down on Chris Pine because Chris Pine thinks he knows everything, but it comes to a point that he doesn't know everything. Denzel Washington sort of has to help him along, but then there's an accident happening along the way, so they have to work together.
Not an accident.
What? Is this an action movie?
The movie's called Unstoppable.
No, it is an accident.
Thank you.
They can't unstop the train,
but it was somebody made a mistake and it was an accident.
Yes,
They put it on to move the train out of the way, and the train got away from them.
Right.
They didn't get back in time. And so now it's a runaway train, and it's threatening to barrel through and destroy something.
Based on a true story.
Is it? Okay.
It is based on a true story.
So Chris Pine is the person brought in by corporate to work on the trains. He's almost like an overseer. And Denzel, is the grizzled veteran. He's about to retire. As you said. So,
I'll just speak quickly. I had a couple problems with this. I mean, Denzel Washington's doing the grizzled veteran. Does Chris Pine really do anything in this movie other than sit there and play buddy with Denzel Washington? He does all the action work. Denzel just sits on the train. And tells him what to do.
Basically, the two of them take their engine and they race up to try to catch up to that train.
I understand that.
So that Denzel or Chris Pine can hop over
and stop the other
train, right?
But, I mean, I watched this for the 2 hours it was on. Thought it was okay. Thought it was decent. It told its story. But it never got better than okay for me.
So, just out of curiosity, what's the risk here? So, we've got a high-speed train that cannot be stopped.
Correct.
What happened? So, what are they trying to stop it from doing?
Destroying a town that's in the way.
Destroying a town.
I mean,
it could fall off the tracks.
It'll either hit another train and collide. I mean, there are a couple of near misses along the way.
Yeah.
Where there's a guy taking kids out on a train, and they just narrowly get caught up and out of the way. But,
and there is another one where they destroy a car altogether. It just barrels through.
Yeah, barrels through an intersection. There's this town. And I don't know what idiot designed this town, but and there's this town where there's a curve, and the train tracks go around the curve, and below the curve are fuel tanks, like giant gas and oil repositories. So if the train goes through fast, then it'll fly off the tracks into the oil, gas, and oil thing, and literally blow up an entire town. Thousands of people will die.
What's the name of this town, MacGuffin?
It's called, But it's an actual town. I mean, they physically show, unless it was computer generated.
No, it's a real town. I think this is all real stuff in this movie. I think all the trains are real, and the train car was real.
So they managed to slow it down enough that it makes the turn, right?
It does.
And then it's just a matter of, eventually there's some tension as they try to slow the train down. And
but my question, do you care about these characters at the same time?
Yes. Well, I think they do a good job of building up the fact that Chris Pine needs the job. He needs the money. He's got a young family. His wife is going to leave him or something.
Yes.
I think. And he's got kids. And then Denzel has two daughters who work at Hooters.
Yes.
Right? And they don't like their father that much or something.
You're right.
So it's just, you know what, it wasn't an offensive film. There wasn't a lot of violence in it. There wasn't a lot of swearing in it. it was adventure. You know, they have to rescue the train. It could kill people, but, you know, they don't.
I'm listening to it. I'm still having
it. To me, it was a decent action thriller that you could rent and show your family.
That's it. That's what I thought. Very G-rated audience, this movie.
Right.
Like, I enjoyed it. I give it 2.5 out of 5. It's an average film.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't know worse than average. No better than average.
Right.
But no need to own it, buy it, or ever watch this again.
No, right. I agree. It's solid performances. They're not bad.
We told you everything you need to watch. Train runs away because Ethan Swerpy's an idiot. Off it goes.
It's a 2-hour time killer.
That's it.
It was okay.
It'd be great for a plane when you're stuck and you can't move.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Well,
but it's an enjoyable film. You just have to suspend your disbelief.
I'm not
what
saying.
What could happen? Like if it didn't crash through the town or whatever.
I'm not saying it's not an enjoyable film.
Well,
I
fell asleep, though.
No, I watched the whole thing. But it's just not great.
I have to disagree.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Another one.
I agree, Simon. It's average. But maybe a little bit above average. Like a 60% of a good film.
Yeah.
60%.
So maybe we should take the first half unknown and take parts of unstoppable.
So he remembers and then he has to stop the train.
Right.
There you go. All
right. That would have been fun.
It's coming. All
right. Next movie on our list is Conan the Barbarian 2011, directed by Marcus Nispel. Starring Jason Momoa, Ron Perlman, Rose McGowan, Rachel Nichols, and Stephen Lang. Who saw this one?
Hell no.
Who saw it in 3D? 2 out of 3. Well, all right. So, Conan.
3D.
Simon, what did you think of Conan?
You really want my opinion on this?
Yes.
This was a flaming pile of shit. I want my money back. It was awful.
You actually paid to see this in a theater.
I was there.
Really?
Back up here.
You paid money to go to a theater.
Yes.
To see this movie.
Yes.
Why?
Why?
There were so many other better movies to see than that.
Because it's Conan.
I like Conan.
Apparently not. You said it was a flaming pile of shit.
I like that character. It was awful.
I love Conan. So, like, why wouldn't anyone who loved Conan not want to go see this
movie? Exactly. But this was awful, Kevin. An actual coherent story might have been nice. Oh, I don't know. Something called dialogue.
Simon. Wow. Here's where watching trailers come into effect. You hear trailers, then you see what's going to happen in the movie.
What was good about this movie?
Tell us a little bit about this movie and why was it so bad?
I don't know. I don't remember any of it. I blocked the whole thing from my mind. It was that bad.
We loved the movie.
You're kidding me.
Well, no. You tell him why you loved the movie.
Are you backtracking on me?
You tell him why you loved the movie.
Tell
and
me.
Then I'll tell
because
him.
Because I thought it was really close to what the Conan character was originally supposed to be. I mean, it's got Ron Perlman in it. Any movie that has Ron Perlman in it automatically merits, you know, a fair look. And it shows you
Aliens
Conan.
Aliens 4.
What?
I think it was Aliens 4. Aliens 4.
Season of the Witch. It's very good.
I really enjoyed the movie. I mean, I thought there was tons of awesome action. I thought that wow, you've been practicing on your dramatic expressions of disgust. Look at him tapping its fingers. Oh!
Well, you know, let's just point out that Simon had to spend some time with Marty at the film festival. That disgust on a whole
level. Okay, so why did you like this movie? Because it was based on the Robert E. Howard character,
right.
And you're just like, Kevin, give me a better review.
I saw it
in
3D.
Thank you.
Okay, and I did enjoy it a lot. Okay, I thought Momoa was a good Conan.
No issues with him.
Had personality.
He's fine.
I thought he looked the part. I thought he looked kind of freaky looking in the original.
But he was
weird
born on the battlefield.
But he was good. And you know what? What was the plot of the story? All right. The plot was basically. They started out. They explained it right at the beginning. There is this mask that you can summon the dead.
Yes.
Okay. And it was so dangerous that thousands of years before the time of Conan, they split the mask into pieces. And various tribal chieftains hid it and kept it in places.
Right, and the other guy was going to look for the piece.
So Stephen Lang, who was almost unrecognizable as Stephen
Lang. He was unrecognizable.
I didn't think it was. I'm like, that's Stephen Lang from Avatar. And, right? So he's assembling the pieces of the mask, right? So Conan's father has one of those pieces. So similar to the old Conan, his father is making a sword for him and showing him the Riddle of Steel. And there's a great sequence where the young the teenagers in the tribe are the Sumerian tribe, are supposed to run around, and the guy that makes it around will be made a warrior, right? So Conan is young, and he's not really supposed to do these trials, but his father says, fine, go ahead and do it. He ends up racing around, and at that time, I guess the Picts decide to invade with this guy. And anyway, I thought that was a very good sequence. And there's a great battle scene where the young Conan takes out, like, four of these Picts.
Yeah.
Right?
So
great battle sequence.
I'm so far agreeing with what you're saying. I just didn't like it.
And then jump ahead, his father's killed. 20 years later, Conan he's Conan now. He's had his first adventures. He's now with the pirates on the Black Coast. So it's sort of mid-level Conan in the Conan stories. So
we're at issue 100, I know you're right.
Yeah, issue, right around issue 100 of the comic book series. Billy, I guess, is dead.
Yep.
Right? Although technically that would be a great movie if they were.
But that's what I wish they were doing.
So he's with the pirates on the Black Coast, and he rescues some people from slavers, and he parties and he gets drunk, and anyway, he learns about this girl who has the blood of the kings of the race that made the mask, and the guy wants to capture the girl because her blood will open the gateway to allow him to get the power.
You're right.
Okay? So and his daughter is a sorcerer as well.
Yes, because she
can sense this out. That's, what's
Rose
her name?
McGowan.
Rose McGowan. And she's kind of creepy looking to look at.
Anytime. I've already nodded off.
Okay.
So
no, I have my question then is, so is this a remake of Conan the Barbarian or retelling of it?
It's totally a new story. It's like, the good thing about Conan is there's no Conan story. You could go to the Howard stories and tell the origin of Conan or whatever. But all you need to know is that Conan he's this big warrior guy who likes to drink, he likes to get drunk, he likes to, you know, find women, but he has a kind of a code of honor.
He leads Kevin's life, is what Conan is.
I guess so, yeah.
Got it.
But
it's all making
Conan
sense.
Has this code of honor that he follows and his way of dealing with people and stuff like that that is hard to find, but eventually, you know, if someone's in his trust or in his care, then he fights to the death with them.
He does.
Right? And I thought this was well done. I thought the effects were great. I thought the battle sequences were okay. It's better than Kull and some of the other sword and sorcery movies they've tried to make over the last few years.
I don't mind Kull.
I think there's potential for them to do a better Conan movie with Momoa.
Yes.
And this was a good establishing...
Fine.
And he's smart. That's the difference, is it's not Arnold.
Oh, we're getting Arnold. I can't wait to get to Arnold.
Yeah, so it's not Arnold's dumb barbarian.
I hope
Barbarian.
That they've seen them.
She's seen one, for sure.
Oh, good.
So,
this movie's crap. Skip.
I liked it. I can't wait to buy it.
Oh,
you're the guy that bought Your Highness, is all I have to say.
I loved Your Highness.
What?
I had to sit through Your Highness. He loves it.
Oh,
what was wrong with it?
But I will say this though, like the casting was great. Rose McGowan as the witch daughter was really effective.
I never saw it.
And
battle lines have been drawn.
Okay, I'll just let Bob. Laugh.
Sorry, you okay now? That stopped you laughing.
We're going to a good movie, by the way.
All right, last new movie on our list. I hope you liked.
I did.
It's called Rise of the Planet of the Apes, directed by Rupert Wyatt, stars James Franco, Frida Pinto, Andy Serkis as Caesar. John Lithgow, Brian Cox, Tyler Labine, Madison Bell, Tom Felton from the Harry Potter movies, and David Hewlett. So, who saw Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
I saw part of it.
Okay.
My disc was a little pixelated, so I did not get to see...
Stop going to Chinatown and go to the movie theater, honey. You won't have a problem.
Oh.
Wow.
Is this one in 3D?
No.
I don't know. I didn't see it in 3D.
All right. Well, did you like what you saw?
I did, sort of.
How far did you get?
I got up to the point where Caesar has grown up. So, like, I don't even know the age, maybe 5 years. Like, he's big. You know, he's mm-hmm. big. And it was the scene where they came out of the forest, and they got into the car, and Caesar and the dog were fighting.
Oh, you're not that far. You're a long way to go. You've run half five.
Sorry, my disc was pixelated.
Shiny and down. Go back.
Same
disc
you gave
it's the same disc right. you gave well, me, Bob. So you probably wouldn't have seen it either.
That would have seen
it. Yeah, that's what that was.
We've got to stop watching these
okay,
pixelated.
Okay, Andy Serkis, my God, he should get a Best Supporting Actor nomination for this. He was so effective. And also, I like the fact that the road to eventual ape domination of the planet starts because James Franco character, his father, played by John Lithgow, is suffering from Alzheimer's and his son just wants to save him. It's awfully hard to say no to somebody who wants to save their parent from a horrible disease. And everything grows very naturally. So I thought it was a wonderful movie. The CGI is flawless.
I liked what I saw. The only thing I felt, again, having not seen it all, I thought the Frida Pinto character was really weak.
Really weak. Non-existent.
Like, okay.
That was James Franco's girlfriend.
Right? Yeah. Like, that could have been completely.
No, that's just Frida Pinto.
All right. Send her back to Slumdog. All right.
Again, that's just Frida Pinto.
Yeah, so that, I don't know. That, again, having not seen how it ends yet, obviously.
If you need somebody that can act. And
right.
That doesn't need a personality.
Right.
Just hire Frida Pinto.
Frida Pinto.
Or
right.
Kate Hudson. Neither one will probably do the role just fine.
Oh, all right.
All right, so you had some points.
This movie is fantastic. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Absolutely blew me away how much I like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting I
write this down.
Hate this movie.
Simon likes something.
I love this movie. I can't wait for the part two. I was at the beginning. I was like, okay. It hooked me. Franco did a perfect job.
Yeah.
And I mean, after seeing 127 hours of pain, I thought maybe I would never like it again.
Fabius.
Yes.
In my favorite movie, Your Eyes.
This is
the host of the Oscars.
This is so. This is so good. Like, Andy Serkis playing Caesar. I like the whole way they developed the virus for Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
And it worked really well in apes, and it worked well in humans, but it didn't continue with humans.
Right.
But
human antibodies defeated the
but threat. The apes couldn't, and it made them smarter.
Right. The apes' intelligence level increased.
And the whole thing, when you see Lithgow getting smarter, and then Caesar likes it, and then when Caesar beats up the guy for picking on Lithgow and then goes to the thing and Tom Felton pretty much creates.
There's a real bond between Caesar and John Lithgow.
Absolutely there is.
You know, it's very sad to watch him. It's great to see him improve, but then to see him decline is sad. And Caesar's fantastic. The joy of you know, just climbing around this little ape in human clothing, and you know, he has his own little jungle gym rooftop.
That was awesome.
Apartment.
Very, yeah.
And I thought the acting was really smart. I mean, I thought it was.
I love the end of this movie when the apes go nuts and they go underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. And they get around the cops and they have the big cop fight at the end. Sorry, Karen. And
okay.
It's just fantastic.
You know,
absolutely great.
And you know what? It would not have had the impact that it did, because I love those action scenes at the end too. But without those earlier establishing scenes where you really believe that James Franco, John Lithgow, and Caesar are a family. Where you really believe that they are a family unit, it wouldn't have the same, like, it was, like, at the end of the movie when Caesar, like, hugs his human family goodbye, I was almost misty. Like, it was such a beautiful moment, because Caesar realizes he can't be in this world anymore, because he's not a pet, and he's not a person.
I agree with you 100%. I felt for Caesar then.
Well, did you cry?
When they took him away.
Oh.
That was heartbreaking, first off, that they had to take him away because of defending John Lithgow. But he goes through some pretty nasty stuff in the ape house. And not only that, he has to re-acclimatize himself to ape culture, right?
Yeah.
He's smart enough to be in human culture and human behavior. But once he's dealing with ape alpha male patterns and things like that, he very quickly dominates by using his brains. But he forms a relationship with the gorilla. You know, that's where you see the foundation of what would eventually become in the ape movies, the class distinctions. You know, there's a baboon there, and he's very smart and knows how to sign as well. He doesn't speak for most of the movie. And that's kind of the big moment is when he reveals he can, but he signs. So when he meets another ape that signs, they form a bond and they communicate. Meanwhile, the company is experimenting on other apes. You know, like, I don't know who thought, let's pick the ugly scarred ape and make him smart. That was a strange choice. But anyway, and the whole thing just evolves well. I mean, there's a point in his life where he remembers fondly, and that's when he climbs the redwoods across the bridge from San Francisco. And, you know, that's where he takes the apes once he gets freedom. And the interesting part, of course, is that the Alzheimer's drug mutates and becomes a virus that destroys most of the human population. And that's how the Planet of the Apes began. Because they never quite explained that in the original series, which we'll be getting to. Where did, you know, it seemed like the apes just defeated the humans, and then all of a sudden the humans are 100 years later or 200 years later are suddenly, like, wearing loincloths and running in the jungle. They can't speak.
But I thought they worked that in perfectly, because they sort of said, oh, that guy didn't come to work. Why did he never miss his work? And you see him trying to get to the guy's house?
Mm-hmm.
And that they just left that. Like, just sit there for number two. They really left that
pipe there.
And then
they showed someone who was affected getting on a plane, and then they didn't actually, the very end of the film, if you stayed for the credits, it's the flights as affected people travel to centers around the globe.
It's like Contagion.
Very much.
Very much like Contagion.
And that's what, when I watch Contagion, I'm like, wow, it's like
Planet of the Apes. We'll be in a future episode, but, it's basically, this is how the Planet of the Apes rises, is that the apes are immune and are intelligent, and they're forming a culture.
So did you like the throwbacks to the original, if you were watching, when he says no?
The Lost, and also the Lost, the references to the Lost space mission that you see.
Yeah, Colonel Taylor's mission is going to Mars.
It's on the TV, and they have a map of the Forbidden Land at one point on the wall. And no, take your hands off, you filthy. Like, it's all there. I mean, if you're an ape fan, you really like this. They made an effort.
And the very last sequence when Caesar speaks in sentences other than just saying no, it's a powerful moment. And,
absolutely.
And what I liked about it, too, was that he confronts Franco, and they're no longer are they... you know, father and son, or master and servant, or whatever.
They're
equals. And they meet and depart on that, on a friendly term. And he wishes him well. And I think there's hope at that point that the intelligent apes and the humans can some point
coexist.
But then, of course, humanity is decimated. So this is where the second one will come in, if they make a sequel. So.
But again, what makes it all work is the fact that the drug that winds up destroying humanity is developed for the very best reasons, like to save our parents from the horrors of Alzheimer's. Like, who can't relate to that? Like, wanting to give people, well, like it because it's such a powerful way to insert the drug into the narrative.
Mm.
And so at the end, when it all goes topsy-turvy, it's really sad.
Right. Okay, well, that wraps up our new movie portion. So it's time to pay a visit to the vault.
Yes, come in.
You know, normally I added something in here. I'm going to leave that. I'm staying in.
It's Bob the Crypt Keeper.
It is.
Hello, kitties.
Actually, I was going to do something else, but that'll do.
Sorry, can I take this point just to give a shout out to my buddy?
Which would be?
Mr. Barry. Thank you for listening. That's all.
Chuck Berry?
Chuck Berry, yes, it's Chuck Berry.
All right. Twisting
and Shouting. It's Alex Berry. It's a buddy of mine named Alex Berry. He quite enjoys the show, so I think I'm listening this far for your shout out. Why are there so many damn filthy apes in here, Kevin?
It's Ape Night, man.
Is it Ape
Night? Get your damn dirty paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
All right. Okay. I'm on notes.
That's another one.
Chuck Bob Heston.
I love Chuck Bob Heston.
let's kick it off with the granddaddy of them all, 1969 or 68's Planet of the Apes, directed by Franklin J. Schaffner, starring Charlton Heston, Ronnie McDowell, Kim Hunter, Maurice Evans, James Whitmore, James Daly, and Robert Gunner, slash as Landon.
I have a question. Wasn't Paul Williams in this?
Paul Williams, no.
No, he's not in this.
No, he's
on
Williams.
The Muppet Show with Miss Piggy.
Paul Williams is the little
Someone
guy.
Someone told me he played the head ape in this.
No. That was it?
That's what I thought.
In the Caesar movies, which we'll be getting to, he plays the orangutan companion of Caesar.
That's where, okay, because somebody told me some one of these, I'm like, I don't know.
Don't you watch these?
I did. Okay, Planet of the Apes, go Kev.
All right, Planet of the Apes, written by by Rod Serling.
Mr. Twilight Zone.
Great music by Jerry Goldsmith. Groundbreaking stuff.
So Kev, go for it.
All right. Ultimate male survivor, Charlton Heston, is on a space mission, right? He's gone, he's been sent to go populate a new Eden. He's got two male astronaut companions and some blonde woman.
Who dies early.
Right? So their ship goes through a time warp into what he thinks is the future. Okay? Now, the female astronauts... compartment standard animation
cracks. Bye-bye.
And she ages and dies. But the other three guys grab their survival gear when the crash is in this desert, and they start heading into the inland area. And along the way, they see signs of a civilization, but no concrete evidence, until they see people running around, basically naked, and you know, they're captured by apes.
Yep.
Okay, and one guy is killed, the other guy is injured, and Charlton Heston is also injured. His throat is damaged, so he can't speak. And they're captured by apes. And at that point, we get to see a little bit about ape culture, about the way it's broken down into chimpanzees are like the researchers and workers. The orangutans are the government and the lead scientists. And the gorillas are the enforcers. They're the
military,
the policemen. So Charlton Heston eventually regains his ability to speak and deals with Cornelius and Zira, two research scientists who are studying humanity to see if any possibility that that apes evolved from humans. And so there's this whole a bit. And anyway, there's a great scene where Chuck Heston breaks free and gets chased around the village. And he speaks for the first time when they throw him in a net, and he says, "Get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape." And at that point, you know, the music kicks in, and it's now the trial of humanity and how man destroyed his world, and Chuck Heston, as the representative of that world, has to be destroyed. And then there's, you know, and trying to find evidence that there was a human civilization on that planet. And of course, we all know the famous end sequence where
They blew it all to hell!
He sees the Statue of Liberty
half melted
in the ocean. Not melted, but toppled over in the water. So, who wants to kick off their review of the film? Karen.
I remember this, you know, growing up, it was like even a cult movie way back then. I think it was an instantaneous following to this movie, and it was on magazine covers. There was a line of toys. Like, I have very vivid memories of this as a child. Watching it as an adult, obviously, my take is a little different. I love the correlation between ape society, human society, to watch the old ones, they're so dated.
Mm.
I can't help but have that. You know, I'm in my own time warp because they seem so dated.
But, you know, there are still some really punchy moments in the movie. I mean, I remember the first time, from the very first time I saw this movie, there were two things that really stood out. The first was the scene where the Charlton Heston character sees one of his astronaut companions in a crowd scene, and he goes over, and we realize...
He's frozen.
No, and he realizes that the apes have...
Oh, wow, he's brain, yeah.
And you realize that they are perfectly, that at least somebody is aware that this is something that needs to be covered up in the government.
Mm-hmm.
The second freaky moment is one where where Charlton Heston finds himself in the Natural History Museum and he sees his third astronaut buddy who's been killed, mounted, and stuffed as an exhibit. That was really creepy. I remember even as a kid, I found that very, very disturbing. And the rest of the movie is just pure wall-to-wall awesome.
I don't even have words for it because it was such a part of my growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, between my cousins and I, you know, again, with the toys and all of the marketing that came along with this movie, it really had such a following.
Well, I don't know if the marketing was there right from the start. I think it was one of those movies that came out of nowhere and was a huge hit for Fox.
Yeah.
Fox was in trouble. I mean, they made this movie. There might not have been a 20th Century Fox if
right.
they hadn't made this movie. So it was a huge financial success for them and a critical success because it's actually very smartly written.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue is very, you know, it still holds up very well.
It's very quotable, this movie.
Yeah, I'm watching. And of course, Charlton Heston is at the height of his...
Charlton Heston.
Yeah, he's you know, just exuding that, you know, you don't see you know, this and the Omega Man are like the Charlton Heston of the 70s, you know, this kind of...
Manly.
Swaggering...
Yes.
Yeah, I want a gun, and that's it, you know.
And no shirt.
The music is fantastic. The direction is great. The makeup effects for the apes are fantastic and still hold up, I think, very well. I don't think the first movie doesn't feel dated to me.
No?
It feels watchable. I mean, there's a reason why CDTV shows it every
All
year
the time.
Right after midnight on January 1st. Is this our future? It used to be 2001. Now, since we've gone past that, we see Planet of the Apes. Because is that our future?
From the story perspective, yes, it holds up. I still see it a little bit dated.
Mm.
But not unenjoyable.
Mm.
I mean, I'm certainly not leaning towards that at all. Because clearly, you know, the Space Channel airs it as well for
oh, yeah.
a reason. Because
yeah.
marathon of this...
Deb mentions those shock moments, and
mm-hmm.
and this movie has a lot of da-da-da moments that you just, like when Chuck Heston speaks for the first time, or when he meets an ape that talks for the first time, and he's like, holy shit, that's a talking gorilla on a horse. You know, that kind of thing, you're like, whoa, what's going on here? It's like a madhouse, it's all topsy-turvy, you know. Any thoughts, Bob?
Well, just what I agree with, like, the dated part. Not in the story, but I guess in the costumes and makeup at the time, because you look at the advancements in makeup now, and then you look at this, but it still holds up, yes,
mm-hmm.
because, like, the story overrides that. I really enjoyed it when it came out.
68.
Six. But I started watching it in the 70s. I've watched it ever since, and... It's still enjoyable.
It really became a phenomenon
yeah.
after that. Spawned four sequels, but there were toys, there was a cartoon show, a
mm-hmm.
television show. Like, if you look at the history of licensing and movies, you have James Bond, and then you have Planet of the Apes.
Star Trek
to a certain extent. But it was a TV show.
Right?
But Apes was like the next movie after the Bond series to really capture people's attention and get that licensing. No, and then, of course, yes, Star Wars is the granddaddy, but...
But that's 77.
Yeah. And you'd think Fox would have known because they were doing licensing with Planet of the Apes. They would have been aware. Like, when Lucas said, I want the licensing rights for toys and stuff like that, you'd think they would have some familiarity.
They didn't think that movie was going anywhere, though.
No, they thought it was going to.
Star Wars
was something we couldn't talk about.
Yeah, well done.
Star Wars, but, which I have the Blu-ray set, so I'm all geared up to do those.
We've done Star Wars, though.
The other thing I like about this movie is the fact that in an age where so much can be mocked up with CGI and motion capture suits, when Charlton Heston is talking to an ape, he's talking to an ape. Like, you know, like, he had, like, the actors had that incredible makeup to bounce out off of and inform the performances, which I think is really cool, because there's a real sense that, like, if somebody is in an ape suit, they're in an ape suit. And, you know, there's just something that CGI, no matter how good, can't quite match that. It's one of the reasons I love, one of the many reasons I love this movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, Roddy McDowall turns in a great performance.
He does.
He really sells it.
He does.
And so does Kim Hunter as Zira.
Yep.
And Maurice Evans as
Dr.
Zayas. Dr.
Zayas. Yeah. Everything you guys have said, I'm letting you guys go tonight.
All right, and you haven't added any. What do you
think? Nothing really. I think I've already heard, I enjoy this movie. I don't love this movie.
Mm.
And there's no issues with it. I agree with everything you guys are saying. Mm. I've never really been, I enjoy it, but I don't love it. Like, I can watch it again and again, that's fine, but I'm never going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
I just have issues with it. It's Chuck. It just drives me nuts. I think
Chuck.
And that's just him. And I think Ryan McDowell does a great job. I mean, what can I add to what you guys said? This is a great movie. I'm just going to go see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic that everyone should see at some point. It's one of those movies. For everyone's movie lists, you should at least see Planet of the Apes.
I'm with that.
These other ones will I'm not sure.
Well, I have to agree with you on that. I'm waiting to talk with the other ones.
A couple years after Planet of the Apes, because it was so successful, they started talking about sequels. And again, usually, you know, that time, they didn't really do sequels a lot.
No, it was a very new concept back then.
So they decided to revisit Planet of the Apes with a film called Beneath the Planet of the Apes. So it's directed by Ted Post. Stars James Franciscus, Kim Hunter, Maurice Evans, Victor Buono, Linda Harrison, and Gregory Sarah. Interesting enough, Roddy McDowell is not back for this one. Right? He wasn't available.
Do you know he just said two Batman villains from the TV show?
Really?
Victor Buono plays King Tut, and Maurice Evans is the Batman villain too in the show. Sorry.
What did Maurice Evans play in Batman?
I can't remember, but he is on the show.
Okay, so...
Trivia question.
I can't remember off the top of my head. I used to know.
So another spaceship lands in the future from our time, carrying another astronaut who buries his companions, and he encounters Nova, Linda Harrison, who was with Charlton Heston. Why isn't she with Charlton
Heston?
Well,
yeah, I know, that's kind of bizarre.
Yeah. So she leads him back to ape civilization to get help from Kim Hunter and Roddy McDowell, who's been replaced by some other guy. And we're right back into the ape thing again.
Yep.
With another actor.
Yep.
It's almost like a retread of the first
movie. It is.
But there's something new to the mix. And that's that there are mutants who survived in the remains of New York City.
Yes.
So I'm gathering that Apeland is in New Jersey somewhere. The mutants, led by Victor Buono and some other guys, they look like people, except they're wearing giant sheets and have headbands and stuff like that. But they have telepathic powers, and they worship the atomic bomb.
Yep.
And somehow the apes are going to remove these mutants, and the mutants are trying to brainwash and kill the apes.
Yep.
And it seems that this is these are mortal enemies. There's a whole history here that we.
I know, which doesn't make any sense at all. There's only like 10 mutants in the whole place.
But the mutants look like us.
Yeah.
But they aren't. They've actually evolved, and they wear masks, and under the mask they have weird kind of veiny.
When they take them off.
Yes. When they reveal themselves to their god, the bomb.
The bomb.
So he meets Charlton Heston. There's a big fight. Charlton Heston falls on the controls to the bomb, and the entire planet blows up in that scene.
This movie sucks.
Wait, you forgot the best part. There's like this weird tacked-on narration at the end of the movie.
Yes,
that's right.
There's like a plain white screen.
And then the planet Earth died.
Pretty much.
And a small twinkling light in the blue heavens moved out.
Do you know Heston didn't want to do this movie?
Oh, you can tell.
Because he asked for some crazy amount of money, and they said, yeah, okay. And yeah. they gave it to him. That's why he's only in the movie. They wanted the whole movie to have Heston in it. They wanted to continue his storyline. But he didn't want to do it. So they made up this whole movie for Heston and only put him in those 10 minutes.
Right.
This movie's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely a good drop from the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting there like, okay, so the monkeys know these humans exist for obviously a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just finally getting over there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Hey, gorilla, yeah? You bored? Yeah. You know, those mutants have been there for a while. Let's go clean them up. Yeah, okay.
They're talking humans.
They're talking
humans.
Kill them. We better kill them. You know, we found those other talking humans, like, 2 years ago. But let's go clean up these. This is bizarre.
Okay, my apology isn't perfect. Is this the movie where Vera and Cornelius reveal they're going to have a blessed event?
No, that's the next one.
Next one. Okay.
That's the third one.
This movie sucks. There's no point in seeing this.
Have you guys seen this?
I have. I was multitasking and doing several things while this one was planned.
Putting batteries in toys. And
yeah. They see, like, I want to like this movie because James Franciscus is actually quite earnest and he's trying very hard.
Come on, it's Victor Buono. We got to love him for King Tut.
Right. But, you know... The cast is, you know, Maurice Evans is, he's Dr. Zaius being Dr. Zaius. And if you love Dr. Zaius, as I do, for a strange reason, you know, it's nice to see him on the screen. Kim Hunter is Kim Hunter. I mean, they're just retreading the same stuff.
Come on, Dr. Zaius figures out they can get by the telepathic watching the apes burn.
Yeah. And that's an interesting sequence, too.
That's not bad. I thought it was a nice sequence.
The effects were pretty decent in this one, so. But. Yeah, it's just the heart's not in the right place. And the fact that they wanted to say, we don't want to keep making monkey movies forever, so let's just destroy it.
Yeah.
Blow it up. But the thing is that the movie was so popular with kids and had caught the attention of that generation of early 70s who liked science fiction and fantasy movies and so forth, that they had to go back to the well for a third time. And that's where our next film in the series, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, shows up. And that's directed by It's All Missing from Here. Anyways. What's that?
A smoothie just appeared.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, the 10-year-olds of North America genuflected at the altar of the atomic bomb, and this movie came forth.
Okay. So, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, it's Roddy McDowall back again. And Kim Hunter is back again. Now, we thought they were all gone. The planet's dead. How can you have another Easter?
Well, I couldn't figure this out, but I did figure it out.
It starts off in the now, and a spaceship crashes in 1973 or whatever. And in the ship are apes.
Apes.
It's Zira, Cornelius, yeah. And Dr. something or other. Yes. Dr. Robert, we'll call him. So,
not Dr. Zaius.
Not Dr. Zaius.
No,
they're all
is gone.
And they know, they're smart enough to know that they can't talk in front of people, so they're just smart apes, and they get put in a zoo, sort of similar to our Caesar in Rise. And there are some sequences that pay homage to this movie, Bright Eyes and things like that. I think Escape from the Planet of the Apes is actually a fun little movie. It's very dated. It's very 1970s. And it's got Victor Newman in a lead role. What's his name again?
Eric Braeden.
And he's good in it. And of course, Khan is in it as well. Ricardo Montalban is a circus owner who takes the baby. They're dumb enough to tell the humans how ape culture starts. And that's that an ape named Caesar says no and starts a riot and the apes rebel. At this point, the whole thing with, the pets haven't died yet. And the apes haven't replaced pets everyone having one in their home. So all that's in the future, but they're worried about that future coming to pass where the apes take over and the humans are gone. So they want to kill Zero, or they want to geld them, actually, and make them freaks. But they have a baby, and the baby... escapes. All right.
The baby doesn't escape. They give it to Ricardo Montalban.
Right, and they replace it with a regular baby.
Regular baby. This is a bizarre movie when they start becoming into human culture and become celebrities.
Yeah, but yeah. I like that. I thought
that
was kind
of strange. Okay. I like the point when the guy is holding up the banana and Zero doesn't want to get the banana and then...
I loathe bananas.
I don't like that, but she won't do the task.
Yeah.
It's just a very strange movie. It sort of stumbles along. I don't think it really has any definite flow.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hunt them down at the end.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, that wouldn't happen.
Now the government hunts them
down. The government hunts them down. I'm kind of like, okay, really? And I'm noticing a drop from 2 to 3.
Well, the budget dropped. So what can you do as far as effects goes? You can only do the effects on 3 apes.
3 apes, that's it.
Yeah, keep it small.
But then one would ask, obviously number 2 didn't do as well as number 1.
Right.
You know, in dollars.
But it still had found an audience.
So then, you know, obviously 3 didn't do as well as number 2. So why is there this cycle
actually,
of it?
3 did better than 2.
3 did better than 2?
3 was actually a bit of a hit.
Oh,
3 right. actually makes sense is probably why.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like Star Trek movies, they say that 8 movies are best, 1, 3, and 5.
Okay.
Okay.
So no, Star Trek movies are best even numbered.
Yes, right. But it's the reverse. Eight movies are 1, 3, 5. Star Trek's are 2, 4, 6. So the pad, like the next one, is a little dodgy. But you know, this is basically, it's an interesting film. It was fun. It had nice, fun characters. It was light. There was humor. There's a charm to this movie that I think that the audience responded to.
Okay. So
did
then
you
we
ever see that one?
Yes, I did, but it was a very long time ago, and as often happens when a movie is on commercial television, it's easy to miss bits and pieces because, you know, you
have a commercial
break, you go to do something, and you come back and it's like, whoa, I missed that. And
or because of editing, it's just not there.
Exactly. I mean, I've seen one numerous times. I've seen the second one a couple of times, but the third one I only have seen, like, bits and pieces. It's disjointed, you know.
Okay.
All right.
I want to continue this.
So we're going to 4?
I want to go to 4. We got to get this done.
All right. So it's 1995, and Caesar's now an adult.
Yes.
And cats and dogs are dead.
Yeah.
Apes have been trained to be pets, domesticated.
And waiters.
Yeah, they're
smart
enough to
do tasks. They're more like
manservants. Yes.
They're trying to make them manservants.
And in training them to do these tasks, the apes are getting smarter.
Yes.
So is it conquest?
This is conquest. And it starts off, they're in like an ape complex. The whole thing takes place on one complex.
Like an ape training complex.
An ape training center. The whole movie takes place there. It never leaves here.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see them in different uniforms. Whatever color uniform the ape's wearing, it's a task they can perform.
Okay.
And also they're very hard. They hose them down. They try to, if they do something wrong, they put fire on them. Like they do definitely treat them awful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ricardo Montalban can't hide Caesar anymore.
Why not? I never understood that.
I guess Caesar's had a life, and now he's become Roddy McDowell. So, for whatever reason, because the government is so oppressive, and there's no need for circus anymore because most of the animals die.
Right.
Right? So, Ricardo can't do the circus. I don't remember how, but at some point, Roddy ends up in general ape population.
Well, he has to because they see an ape getting scolded or something, and Roddy talks.
Right.
Which he's not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, that ape talked. Ricardo's like, no, he didn't. And then Ricardo has to go off and deal with that issue that Roddy started for him.
This sounds like an apes in prison movie. Like,
it's it's a prison movie. No doubt about it.
Right. So he leads the revolt, and he overtakes the facility, and I guess it inspires apes around the world to do the same thing with their masters.
Well, they start having secret meetings.
Right.
You see that a homage to the new one, Rise of the Apes. They definitely take homage to Conquest.
Mm-hmm.
That little scene in the group with all the apes is exactly from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird. Ricardo throws himself out the window. He has to take some tests and they'll figure out he's lying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just bizarre. They're like, oh, I knew he was lying. And they try to find the ape. Basically, the end of the movie is them trying to hunt down Caesar.
Yeah.
And they do find him, but Caesar wins in the end because he takes control of the command center.
Right.
And that's it. And then we get to, I think, the biggest pile of crap I've ever seen in my life.
Well, We're going to argue different points on this one. But okay. The last one is Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
So it's now, Caesar is now, human society is crumbling.
Yes.
There's been the atomic wars and whatever else.
Yep.
There's not much left now. They're in New Jersey somewhere.
I think they're in Newark.
Newark?
I think they're probably in Newark to the
swamps.
Oh, do we have a year just before we go any further? Like, what year does this take place in?
Well, I think we're talking about 10 to 15 years down the line from conquest. So
maybe 10. It's
actually
that long.
Probably right around that would be the time period of this, like 2010, 2011.
Apes don't have a lot in this one. Like, you see them planet, they have a full-on civilization. They do not have a full-on...
Apes are trying to build cities and towns and...
But they're working with humans.
Farming. Right, and they, there are human survivors... Like that one fellow, I can't remember the name. The teacher? Yeah. Who convinces Caesar to work with him, and they start building towards something. But the mutants in New York City,
they're back.
So this is the earlier form of the mutants from beneath the Planet of the Apes, and they're trying to destroy the apes, which they see as being the progenitors for the destruction of the Earth. So it's, I think, from a kid's perspective, as a kid who watched this movie in the 70s, I like this movie because it's apes. It's apes and there's a battle and whatever else. As an adult watching this movie now, it's awful. It's really almost...
Did it make you cry? It was so bad?
No,
it's
not that bad.
It did.
Make you cry. Okay, because I know I have not seen this one.
You can pass.
I can pass.
And that's where Paul, or whatever his name is, Paul Williams is the orangutan buddy who Caesar, Roddy McDowell's Caesar.
Well, they kill Caesar's son in this one.
Yeah.
This movie is horrible. Let's back this up. Caesar discovers, through talking to one of the humans, that there's tapes of his parents existing. So it's a relation back to three.
Right.
So Caesar wants to get access to these tapes. So he goes to where the mutants live in a forbidden territory.
Yeah, he wants to see his parents, what they look like and how they act.
And how they, hear them. He couldn't see them, he could only hear them.
Right.
So he goes in and says, so the humans get mad at him that the apes are trying to take them out. So they get in this, it looks like G.I. Joe against Cobra. It really is.
Are there blue lasers and red lasers?
Pretty much. So the humans go to attack the apes, and the apes fight back. And that's really the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it is so badly acted, it looks like a high school production.
So how does this last of the original ape sequence, how does it end?
It ends with, you jump ahead to a future of the lawgiver statue and a bunch of kids, but it's a mixture of ape and human kids. So it's a different timeline than the one that Charlton Heston was in. Caesar, because of what happened with that teacher and the friendships formed there and the group of humans that work with him, humans and apes evolve together and to create a new society of mutual respect.
Yeah.
So it's a positive ending.
It is.
Right. Yeah.
It's just awful. Like, it's an hour and a half too long.
Okay.
Like, it could have been wrapped up in 20 minutes.
It's a Sunday afternoon movie to watch in between. You remember when they used to run Sunday movies?
Yes.
Like Kung Fu movies and monster movies.
That's exactly fits into that schedule.
This fits right in, and it was enjoyable to it.
This would have been a direct-to-video release nowadays.
Mm. Yeah. And you know what killed? What actually killed the franchise, too, was the Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. It
showed up, like, a year later.
Yeah.
And just made that obsolete.
Fine. That was okay. Yeah. Awful.
All right. Anyone else have anything to add before we go to Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes?
Oh, yeah.
So here's where we get to. This is an even number film. This is number six. So Mark Wahlberg is in an ape space station, or a space station with apes, and he's training apes to pilot spaceships. Right? Each pilot has an ape who works with them. And Mark's ape gets lost in a time thing. And so Mark follows his ape into the mess. It's getting long, I know. I'm trying to wrap this up quick. So he lands on a planet where humans are subservient to talking apes. They've evolved from his ape pilot.
You're great.
And you know what? This is one of the rare Tim Burton movies with no Johnny Depp. However, there is Helena Bonham Carter. So
that's where they met.
Mm. I know. Just the beginning of... Oh.
I have a question for you, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, because in 1.0 in this movie says apes hate water.
Well, there's no Zero.
Or whatever.
Whatever Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, I just call her Zero because I can't remember her name.
Yes, apes hate water.
So how do they hate water in the other ones? They never really... This one actually goes into more of the ape culture than any other one.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, the ape village in the other one is on a river.
No, so they don't hate water?
Well, they don't go swimming in it. But they drink it.
And can we just give a shout-out to Charlton Heston in his last screen appearance?
Oh, as the father of...
yeah, I just think this movie is an abomination. It's awful. Mark Wahlberg is beyond stiff in this one. He's normally stiff.
Yeah.
He makes a great job being the stiffer of the movie. He's awful. You like this movie, Bob?
Yes, I did, for three reasons.
Let's do it, quick.
Okay. Paul Giamatti's facial expressions. Here we go with the makeup again, because we were talking about how the makeup was makeup and costume is dated. Now, going to Paul Giamatti's doctor, I guess it was a doctor, right, or a scientist,
he was a slave trader.
Right, yeah. Okay, he was a slave trader. But when he rolls his eyes and goes like that, and he just, like, that was, I loved it. And
I
then,
thought it was
repulsive, what?
I thought Giamatti's ape was kind of repulsive.
Awful ape. He's
okay.
No,
I agree with Bob.
Thank you, Karen.
I mean, the makeup is great, but...
Yes, the makeup was great.
His character
on Helena Bonham's character and...
Tim Roth.
And what was up with Tim Roth's super jumps?
He's a chimp. I don't know. I love Tim Roth in this movie. I thought he was great. He was so over the top and crazy.
But he was like doing these super jumps. I just remember
the chest beating.
He's chasing Mark Wahlberg. Can he jump in front of him? I remember saying that to myself. Why does he just jump on him?
That's what I appreciated out of this movie. In comparison, say, to the ones from the 60s and the 70s.
They acted like apes.
The apes acted like apes. They had the walk. They had the structure, the staunch, all of that. Whereas,
actually see more varieties, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas, going back to the 68 and the 70 ones, they were, walking upright, just like a human. And
they kind of slouched a bit. They had osteoporosis or something.
And they had one of them had a limp or something. I don't know.
Hey, this movie has a Stell Warren. That's one thing that's good.
But I did appreciate that concept of ape culture.
I'll give you that.
From both.
Can talk in this one. They're not dumb. So why are they being chased around like they're idiots? Like, they actually can speak, but there's... Anyway.
The apes just want to annihilate them, have a fight to themselves.
Right. I mean, basically what happened on the spaceship, they crashed on Earth, and hundreds of years later, thousands of years later, the apes have overcome the humans. So they go back to the human ship, and he uses a laser and whatever. And for some reason, the monkey that he followed shows up. Actually, sorry, let me...
After
him.
It shows up after him for some reason.
Yeah.
Never explained why.
Yeah.
And the ending is so stupid, I just want to, stab myself.
I don't even remember the ending.
The ending of the movie is he hops in his spaceship. He goes back through the time warp. He goes back in time. He goes to Earth. He flies his little spaceship directly to Earth.
Okay.
Lands in Washington at the Lincoln Memorial. He lands on the steps of it, he climbs out, he goes up to it, and it's Tim Roth's
character.
In the statue, right. Got it.
The police arrive, and they get out, and they are all apes.
I like that ending.
I thought that was it made no sense whatsoever.
Oh, it didn't make any sense.
What it tried to say is that Tim Roth went into a ship, went back in time, and somehow conquered Earth.
Yep.
And made apes dominant, but they took their vehicle, they developed vehicles and clothing and everything else along the same
line. Multi-talented apes.
It was touted as a re-envisioning of the original classic ape movie, and it was not well received. It was not well received at all. The makeup effects were fantastic, and if you don't try to take it as part of the ape cycle, and just let it stand on its own, it's a mediocre to average.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
It's a shame, too, because except for, Mark Wahlberg and Stella Warren, who is very beautiful but can't act out of the paper bag.
Don't care.
But, but the actors playing the apes, they got some really great actors in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the.
Yeah,
I really.
Michael Clark Duncan was great as
well. I had great admiration for that aspect of this movie.
It was really good.
Yeah. All right.
Can we do the last two together, Kev? Just
all right. Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer.
Yeah, take it away.
Go ahead.
Arnold in both. Directed, first one directed by John Milius, based on a story by Oliver Stone. Second one is a Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway story. So, who watched them? You guys have never seen Conan? Bob, you've never seen a Conan movie ever?
No, I saw probably bits and pieces and lost interest.
Oh my god, alright. Simon, what do you have to say about Barbarian and Destroyer?
They both suck. Horrible. Oh my god, this first movie
to
is brutal.
You don't have a one over the other preference?
I think the first one's a little bit better than the second one, but not by much. I mean, Conan getting drunk, walking to a wall. I mean, the first one's just him being a little kid, and he gets enslaved and breaks out of enslavement and hunts down his captors. I mean, it's fine. It's a basic Conan plot. I get it. But it's so badly filmed. The acting is atrocious.
Oh, come on. It's a fun movie. I'm going to be...
Conan getting drunk and walking into a wall?
I like the two Conan movies. I do. I mean, come on. The first one is basically Arnold Schwarzenegger fighting Darth Vader. It's fantastic.
What? The giants? He fights the giants? He fights the snake people?
I'm going to agree with Deb on the first movie is great. I think the first movie is a classic. I think it was well written.
It's okay.
Great sequences. The music is fantastic.
The music
is
excellent.
Right? And there's that one scene in particular where they break into his temple and then... like, it just
goes... Yeah, but the sets look like something they built in people's houses. Like, this horrible
looking set. Well, I think
it
was the fact that you have to... It's Dino De Laurentiis. Limited budget. He could build using existing props.
Well, that's what it just... It looked... In the 70s, it would have worked perfectly.
His friend was fine.
Mac was fine. The problem is the sets look cheap.
Sandra Bergman was good as Valeria...
I just didn't like it.
James Earl Jones is fantastic as the leader.
He's doing a good part in it.
And it's good. I mean, this is Arnold starting out. This is him being goofy. This is being action-y. This is, I'm going to kill you or whatever and hear the lamentations of the woman. And
oh, come on. You must know what's best in life.
Yeah, Conan, what is best in life? So it's I like it. I like it a lot. Now, Conan the Destroyer, on the other hand, is a dumbed-down Marvel Comics of the late 90s kind of Mara Conan story, where it's basically the same-looking John Buscema Conan in his furry underwear is sent out to do something with a queen and a princess.
Well, they need her because she's a virgin.
Yes.
And they can put the horn on the guy and have to sacrifice her.
Right? Olivia Dabo... child.
Come on, you have that thief that's not really a thief, and he keeps trying to eat everything so he can shit it out later and sell it. Like, really?
Conan,
yes, look at that big hard cock. Maybe he's going
to
do it.
Later go on the actor to be Bob, my number one guy.
Yes, that's him. That's
the 89 movie?
Yes,
yeah.
That's him.
Bob, my number one guy. So, anyway.
No, you're right.
All right.
It's a horrible movie.
So,
it's awful.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
I'm done with Dino, okay.
It's Conan for 10-year-olds. It's on that level, it's fine. They can look up to the 14-year-old girl and say, wow, she's hot. The rest of us look at
it
and say, that's
very
pervy to see this 14-year-old with
giant
boobs.
14.
She was 14 in that movie.
No way.
She was 14 with gigantic boobs and talking about being a man and all that. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
That was her first movie. She was 14 years old.
Wow, she's good.
And she's paired with I Slept with 10,000 Women.
Schwarzenegger.
The basketball player.
Oh, Doctor.
That's Wilt Chamberlain.
Julie Irving. No, Wilt Chamberlain.
Chamberlain.
I didn't know that was him.
Yeah, that's Wilt Chamberlain. And then there's the very disturbing Grace Jones.
With her little foxtail.
With her little foxtail and.
That's the point of this movie.
It was just a stupid,
awful
Marvel Comics jumble.
Yeah, it's crap.
Not worth it. It's just a footnote to a good film, I thought.
Okay.
All right, that wraps up episode 77. Any last words? Do you want to...
I miss you, Kevin.
We're not going to run through the who do we buy, because this movie's
no, it's too long. You talk too much about AIDS.
Yeah. All right. So, anyone have any last things to say?
No.
All right. No?
No.
All right, well, I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon.
Yeah, I'm Karen.
Intern.
And I'm Deb.
And if they make it.
We'll watch it if we feel like it.